This is what camp's about. Who's with me?
Keep telling your little story. What was that?
Hello? Hello? Can anybody?
Time for you all to leave.
Hey!
Clearly this group has no respect for my lab.
Oh, Bumpy. Gave it a name that's precious.
We're on our own.
We've lined up exclusive behind-the-scenes tours of Jurassic World.
Ooh.
Yes!
Dinosaurs?
Plenty of dinosaurs. So, ready for an adventure?
Absolutely. But I'm gonna need that speech a little shorter and really try to lean into the majesty of this place.
Okay, we're going now. Let's get the six of you to camp.
We're back with another episode during Camp Cretaceous Month, celebrating the first season just before the release of season two, which actually comes out this week. And I've brought back Chris Pugh from the Jurassic Outpost that is apparently on the other side of the island. No help to these kids whatsoever trying to escape. Some outpost, you know? But to help me
on
look
the staff.
At the...
Don't have the budget.
But you are here to help me look at the final episode of the season, which is titled End of the Line. So, Chris, is this the end of the line for you? Are you doing okay? Let me know.
I am at the edge of my seat. You know, it really is. It seems like it's the end of the line for Penn.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, we literally left off on a cliffhanger like every episode. And this one is a literal like cliffhanger here. He's dangling. He's still in the monorail. We're dangling down because Darius just got another grip on him. He's all good. He almost falls. But at that point, it's inevitable. Ben slips from his grasp. And I know the audience for this obviously is Jurassic fans, but it's also younger, a younger audience as well. That's brutal. Like a kid, a young teenager kid just falling to his death, just going all the way to the ground. That's brutal, you know?
It's a heavy scene and it's a lot to process. And it sort of like leaves you with the sense of just like, I can't believe that just happened. And then
even
I think I'm almost at that
it.
Point. I'm like, I don't think like I'm like, that's too horrifying. I'm like, he's got to survive that. Like that's if they're going to kill off a kid, it's going to be more like the way the Clone Wars does it, where it's like sort of not not like that. They do kill kids in the Clone Wars, though.
Yeah, like, I know. It's well. I don't know. Maybe Anakin is down in the jungle with his lightsaber ready to take out Ben. I don't know, but at this point, you know, I'm thinking like, all right, this like you're saying, this is essentially a kid's show. He's got to be okay. Like he's got to be okay. I don't know how because that's absurdly high. They already fell off the zip line, so who knows? You know, it's all up in the air. There's a few moments like that, like. Logistically, it's a little unbelievable, but I'm okay. I'm going with it. It's fine.
Well, you know, it's that Masrani engine grass that they bioengineered to be cushier and larger and grow faster so the dinosaurs can eat it.
There you go. Yeah.
There we go.
let's take a listen to everybody kind of reacting to this news. Here we go.
He's gone. He's gone.
I won't believe it!
Sammy?
No!
So yeah, that ending there basically sets up like you know, a lot of what's going to happen to them in the end, towards this whole episode here. Mm-hmm. I keep looking at that track as they like they show like a shot outside of the monorail, and it's basically what Darius is seeing, and I'm like, how does he know they're turning around? I'm like, what?
I also, once again, I'm like, the visual cues of what's going on here are clearly off screen, that we yeah. have to take their word that there's something for the, it was a little confusing. Yeah. To be fair, though, the entire layout of this island, and this is not a Camp Cretaceous exclusive thing.
Oh, no.
Is very, it's the island from Lost, but like rather than it changing places, it's like re-scrambling itself constantly.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, it's like literally changing positions of everything as they go along. But yeah, I, you know, let alone they're going 900 miles an hour, like you were saying in this mm-hmm. sequence here. The kids had all just watched as Ben was gone. Sammy's crying, obviously, we just heard. Darius is like looking at his hands like, how did I let him go?
Yeah.
But that track switch that they like enabled before to save their lives is now, you know, messing with their end goal here. So Darius is like, we gotta get off the monorail. The track dips down like 20, you know, feet up ahead. Let's jump for it. So they're much braver than I am, I guess. You know,
this is just another part where I felt like the visuals weren't entirely going along with what the script was trying to convey. And like, it could have been a little closer to the ground, and it could have been like just a little less of a speed train. Because yeah. Like, you watch it all, I'm like, oh, okay, he really, that seems like a last ditch resort, and he came to that fast.
Yeah.
But I guess when your train's going 900 miles per hour, you do have to come to that fast.
You know, yeah, you're right. It would have been nicer if like the track dipped down an actual amount and like went towards the ground. Because like at that point, I'm like, well, Ben, as far as you guys are all concerned, definitely just died, right? Like he just died and he fell out. So you guys are also going to die too, right? Like that's what's going to happen here, because there's no reason to be sad about Ben if you guys are also doing the same thing. But they make the jump, and Kenji finds Ben's fanny pack right there. He clips it on, and he grabs Bumpy and just dives out. It's amazing. But Kenji, of course, loses hold as they hit the ground, and Bumpy just disappears.
Bumpy makes a horrifying noise also. When it is literally like it's such like a pain to
squeal, yeah.
It is so Bumpy.
I they might have, yeah. And at this point, they basically, they're on the jungle floor. They're all like, getting up. And they really give up on Bumpy really quick. They're like, Bumpy, where are you? He's gone, or whatever. And that's it. It's like, we're not going to look for him.
I want to rewind on how funny it is when Darius literally without, like, Brooklyn, like, falls on top of it without, like, even seeing if she's okay or anything like that. He literally, like, pushes her off of him and just like starts standing up, like really violently pushes her off him, but without paying. It was just a really funny scene. I'm like, damn. He's like, okay, good, I'm okay.
I gotta rewatch. I don't think I took note of that.
Really comical. I picked it up on the rewatch. I was like, that was just kind of funny. Like, it wasn't even like a groggy, like acknowledging, like not even like just like, it was just like, all right, I'm up. They gave up on Bumpy so quick. Ben, I understand, but Bumpy, they're like, yeah, he was 5 feet away. It's gone.
Seriously, like how far could he have bounced that they just completely lost him? It's like, I mean, at the same time, you're like, are you really going to take this dinosaur with you on the boat?
Yeah,
to
be fair.
I don't know. Like, so it was really Ben's deal. We don't really care as much. Like, you know, Kenji's like, I just carried him.
To be fair, yeah, they're in survival mode, and that is the right thing to do. It's just kind of funny that they kind of allude to being like, rather than just being like we should leave him behind anyways, we're not gonna.
But yeah, you know. One little line saying like, well, we can't bring him on the ferry anyway, you know, like that. That definitely could have soothed it over. I do have a little audio here because we get an announcement over the park-wide speakers, I guess. So let's take a mm-hmm. listen here.
No chance we could get there in an hour. It's way too far.
Not if we leave right now with Bumpy and Ben.
We can't go back for Ben.
Ben's gone. enough time to look for...
We can make it to the ferry, but only if we go now.
Last ferry departs in 60 minutes.
We have to go!
So there's a lot of, like, you know, pauses and gaps there. They're all, like, contemplating what to do, and do we give up? And yeah, ultimately they're like, we have to go. Like, we just fell a few feet less, but we're good. But Ben's definitely gone, so let's run. So they decide to run to the try to head to the dock. I love the the timeline here. We went from 2 hours in the last episode to 60 minutes now. You got to get out of here. 60 minutes left. So at this point, we cut to a vehicle. It's Dave and Roxy are in there. Dave's on the walkie-talkie, like, hoping to reach them. Guys, we're going to go to the dock. We'll meet you at the dock. Just hopefully you'll be there, blah, 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 whatever. But nobody's picking up at that point. So cut back to the jungle. The kids are running through the jungle. Yaz falls because she... You know, she pretty much just destroyed her ankle back at the Mosasaur Lagoon, and she fell off a wire earlier, and she fell off a monorail. Like, so there's a lot of stuff going on with her ankle. It's just not good. So, yeah.
To be fair, I'm surprised that everyone took that very dramatic fall just moments later without any injury, where None. She's nursing a pretty serious injury from less.
Yeah.
But, you know.
She fell on some concrete. Like you said, the grass here is very bouncy, I guess.
Yeah. Falling with style also.
That's also why Bumpy disappeared, because he hit it and he went boing and just like.
Yeah, he's gone. Rolled into a little ball and just bounced off inadvertently.
What I do like about this is Kenji, actually, in this moment, he's in the background of the scene, just like literally, like kind of like. Holding on to the pack and just shell-shocked, completely shell-shocked.
Yeah.
He's not paying attention to anything anybody's saying. He's just back there. And I think, you know, for that character, I think he's like at least the older, you know, person here. He's a bit older than everybody. I think everybody was earlier in a different episode were trying to think like who can drive the car. And he's like the only one with the learner's permit. So he's got to be the older one. I feel like he feels like responsible for these kids in a way. Like he's the VIP. He's the person who's supposed to know the island and know how to navigate things. And I feel like he feels like a heavy weight after Ben.
Yeah. I think that's really sinking in on him, especially there at that moment where, Darius also seems to carry a similar baggage, but like Darius immediately is like, we also need a plan. So because nobody else was taking the plan, Darius kind of went back into, again, that kind of being into that leadership role, whether or not he wanted it or not, he kind of just naturally adopted it and people kind of naturally expect it. So Darius can't process that trauma, and we get to see Kenji. We get to see a very human moment. I like it.
Yeah, I love that character. So at that point, Darius suggests one of Kenji's favorite things is to go down to the maintenance tunnel. And he's like, come on, let's go. So they head down there, and of course, this is going to get them to the dock in half the time. Except they run into a gate. So it seems like there's gates everywhere. Gates are blocked all over the place. The evac must have just like closed off all the gates. Which is expected, I guess. I don't know. It's a little weird that all these underground tunnels, which you would think are for like, you know, employees to get around the park. Why, you know, okay. I guess they're going to close off. I don't know. Maybe it's just because of the dinosaur.
Lockdown, something along those lines where they had like security reasons. And also Kenji sort of doesn't like the gist of it is like, yeah, he knows a lot of things about the park. Mostly didn't pay attention. So, like, if he paid more attention, there would have probably been like things that, like, oh, well, if we follow this way, here's the staff way. This is like the main hallway for like transporting stuff. But we're supposed to take these. You know, I just kind of take it as not enough time to process and not enough information to like
Yeah, that episode where he brings Darius to Toro, he was definitely just like winging it. You know, he's like, I think it's up here, and you go up that thing, and So at that point, they find a bunch of lockers, and they find like a shock stick in there, and more evac announcements. You got to immediately leave. Now you have 30 minutes to get out of here.
Yeah.
And that's when we hear a dinosaur roaring down at the end of the tunnel. The shadow is reflected off, you know, off the red light and bouncing onto the wall. Looks massive,
very Fallen
right?
Kingdom.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And then we cut to the dock, right? And, you know, guests are heard, you know, hurrying off onto the ferry. There's an employee there who's like, come on, go. And, of course, he didn't see any kid. He's like, you mean, did I look for kids while hundreds and thousands of people are running? Like, no, I didn't see any kids. Like,
I'm not paying. He's not paying. There's so many people. Yeah, there's no way he'd be like, maybe they got off. Maybe they didn't. I have no idea. There's the amount of people that he's seen in a short amount of time. I mean, those trains are so fast.
I love that. Like, every time we interact with a new employee on this island, they just literally don't care. They're no help. And whatever, but like, I get it because there's a big, ordeal happening and, dinosaurs are out and guests are trampling all over the place. So you can kind of understand it. But at the same time, I'm like, man, can't somebody help? Can't somebody do anything?
To be fair, at this moment, Hoskins is running his mercs two ways. One with a botched raptor mission where most of their team got taken out. And then the other would be like the Black Ops thing where they're trying to steal the assets, get things off the park. Yeah. So I think it's really like security had their own agenda and didn't quite facilitate maybe in a way that engine security was supposed to. So now these park workers are like, ACU got eaten. We don't know where security is. Oh God. Like it just, to be fair, there was a lot of weird stuff going down in the park. So it does make sense. But yeah, at the same time, the employees are just like, even in Jurassic World where the park ride operator is just like opening the manual like next.
Yeah. I just work here.
I just work here.
you made me think now. I kind of wish I saw like a InGen security guy like running this show, like get on the dock, just kind of angrily sending people to the dock or something like that. That would have worked more for me, I think, instead of just the guy.
I think it would have definitely made sense with them manhandling like Dave and Roxy onto the boat. That would have made more sense. Yeah.
Yeah, because he's like, if you go back and look for those kids, I'm gonna physically stop you. And he I think he has like a taser or something. He's like, stop, like I'm gonna manually or physically put you on this boat if you do not do it yourself. Which is it's shocking. So
shocking.
Yeah. I'm so concerned with the fact that all these people, Jurassic World as a whole, would just be like okay with like leaving people on this island. It's just so concerning to me.
I mean, I'm assuming they're probably secure, like the main evacuation, like, listen, you're not security now that you're in like my view, I'm liable for you, you're getting on that damn boat, is like kind of like what it comes down to. I guess so but I know, but there's just so many gears turning that it just with the weirdness of InGen, I still don't even understand what InGen is in the Jurassic World era, to be honest with you. So I don't know. At this point, their security and their genetics, and they're owned by Mizrani, but they're their own entity, and he never met Miss. I'm so confused by it to this day. So the park was mismanaged.
That's
damn it, Claire.
That's one of my biggest issues with the two films and then the show is, and the show particularly calls them out as like other guys, and I'm like, all right, so now we have Manticore, we have other guys, we have Hoskins working, it seems like, with some other person, also in contact with Wu, and like who. Mills, you got Mills, and then Lockwood, and I'm like, how do all these people know each other? Are they all working
it's
together?
It's too complicated for its own good because some of these elements were clearly not ironed out in advance, to be honest.
You can tell.
But I think it could be tied together, but it's definitely confusing.
Exactly. Honestly, like this show could do all that, and I think that would be great. But it's always one of those confusing things for me, especially. In a few episodes ago when they were like talking about other guys, and I'm like, oh, my brain just goes like, You know, you see that, like, gif of, like, a brain just exploding into, like, you know, all kinds of synapses. And I'm like, oh, God, that's me, thinking about who these other guys are. But at this point, we cut back to the tunnel, right? And there was a dinosaur at the end. It turns out to be a compy. So don't get too worried. It's just a compy. Actually, there's a dozen of them or so. You know, the kids at this point are getting a little heated with each other. I think we mentioned it in the last episode, but they're very back and forth. Love you, hate you. Love you, hate you. So they're going all over the place. At this point, they're very heated about, you know, getting lost. They're all blaming Kenji because he's the guy who knows the tunnels and all that stuff. And they're fighting about the compies. And that's when we get another roar down the hall. Turns out Toro's down there. So this is going to be fun for the kids. Toro's down there. The kids run. Toro, like I think we mentioned previously in the last episode, he's slipping all, or she's he or she, whatever, slipping all over the place.
I don't know. I don't know if Toro, like, because I'm assuming there's sexual dimorphism with the Carnotaurs, because there's that second Carnotaurs in Fallen Kingdom that looks different. So I don't know which one would be. And I think the primary orange one's considered female, so then Toro should be female. But I genuinely don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I just assume female, but then, you know, I always end up saying he too, and I'm like, I don't know.
I think they call him a he at times, I think.
Yeah, or, you know, everybody argues about whether, you know, they're male or female, but like, they always revert back to like Jurassic Park saying all the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park are female. But then throughout that movie, you even get like Grant and others saying he. Like, so it's like, all right, let's just relax. Let's just chill. So it's all good. It's not that big of a deal. Let's see. At this point, like I said, Toro's slipping all over the place. The kids hide in like a vent in the wall. And Darius and Yaz are trying to like pry open another vent, and of course it just makes so much noise. And I love this moment. Toro just like bursting through the vent and you know, attacking the kids right there. So eventually they do escape into another tunnel, and they see a sign for the South Dock exit in 1,000 feet, I believe. And it's just a huge room, a giant, massive dock room kind of thing, and all closed in. They can't get anywhere, so they're stuck.
Yeah, this isn't just like flimsy doors. It is a like concrete and steel. Like it looks like a bomb shelter. Like it's just like at this point, there's literally nowhere to go. It's not like a new challenge. Like not a detour. Now it's just like literally, what do you do? I think it's just sort of like an end of the line type of moment.
Yeah. I mean Brooklyn. I like her comment. She's like, they must have sealed it off when they finished the park. I'm like, oh, okay. and at that point, you know, they're all trapped, and then they do hear Toro down at the end of the hall. And of course, everybody's like, Darius, what do we do? What do we do here? Because you're the guy, obviously. And Darius, he's lamenting on some things. So I have some audio here. Let's take a listen.
Darius, what do we do now?
I don't know.
But you always know.
I don't know!
I don't know what to do. I didn't know what to do about Ben, or Bumpy, or when the Indominus Rex attacked. All I did was make bad choices and get into trouble and mess everything up. You never should have trusted me. I should have just stayed home. I'm a dino nerd who played a video game, and I'm no good at this.
But you are good at this. I mean, like, I'm sure you're fine at video games too, not downplaying that. But none of us would have known what to do, Darius. But because you didn't give up, we didn't give up either.
You kept us going, no matter what some of us have done.
You made us feel like we were in this together. So, we are. We're a team. We're your team.
Things fall apart. And that's okay. Because when that happens,
we pick up the pieces, and we keep going.
And this show's really good about its like independence day moments, you know, with the speeches and all that stuff.
I never really thought of good. It that way, independence day moments. That's funny. I it's completely not exactly the same, but I want to mention just the music throughout the show is consistently mm-hmm. my favorite Jurassic music since the original films. Now, I do like what Michael Giacchino has done, but I don't necessarily always think it's as incorporated as well as it could be, and I don't think that some of the legacy themes have been brought forward as much as they could be, and I feel like this show really captures that texture and tone while also doing a lot of really good original music.
Yeah,
I like
it. Yeah. Yeah, the original stuff always stands out to me, and you know,
it feels right.
Oh, for sure. During these emotional moments, it really hits hard, and so many of those moments, I'm like, this stands on its own with, you know, Jurassic Park and Jurassic World scores. So I really appreciate it. But yeah, this is that moment like Darius is doubting everything that he's done up until now. But at least his friends, I guess they're friends, I don't know. They come to his defense and kind of, you know, bolster his confidence there. And I love the fact that like Brooklyn mentions that like when things fall apart line, that Darius once recited, that his dad once recited, I believe too.
Yeah.
So it's a really nice detail that they keep that thing moving, you know?
Yeah, I think it's an acknowledgement that these kids do care about each other. They are paying attention to one another. I think that is the exact, like, I understand and I do know what's going through. Like, come on, like, we've got this type of thing. Like, it was a human moment. It was a real, like, kind of raw connection. I liked it.
Yeah, and it, like, instantly – Yeah, it instantly snaps him back into it. And he's like, all right, we got to look in these crates. I got a plan. They find some, like – compressed air canisters and stuff.
A really dangerous plan. I mean, it's totally great. What I'm surprised by, not that these things aren't allowed in cartoons, it's just that we've seen Universal tend to play it a little more safe. I was actually surprised that they showed kids doing a plan like this, because that seemed like one of those things that would just like a studio note would be like, what if kids try to replicate this type of thing?
Make fuses and try to blow stuff up. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, it's not out of the realms. It's not out of the realms of what cartoons do. It's just one of those things when you have a big mega franchise, you have more eyes on it. So I was like, okay, cool. They're like, they're letting it be a Jurassic story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It feels authentically Jurassic. So.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. At that point, Toro strolls in and looking for the kids. Yaz lights the fuse, but like, or tries to, and nothing's working. And of course, Ben, lifesaver here with his hand sanitizer. they're able to light it up with the hand sanitizer. And at that point, I think they try to like push the crates or whatever towards Toro, but Toro's like, nah, I'm gonna smash that. And he blows it away, and it does kind of rock him, like the little explosion that happens. But keep saying him, but you know what I mean. But
it's fair.
I don't know. I just keep going to that. But then Toro's like, all right, enough's enough. I'm going to attack you kids. Toro's being Toro, being clumsy and just falling all over the place still. And, you know, a bunch of near misses and everything. But that's when Darius grabs that good old shock stick there. And I guess they said it compressed air before, and now apparently gas. Is that the same thing? I have no idea. Now gas is leaking from one of the canisters, they say, and Darius is like javelin throwing the thing towards the gas, and there's just a massive, massive explosion. And the kids are like, yes, we did it. We beat Toro. But Toro at that point rises from the grave and is charred and red and black and almost like stumbling all over the place. And, kind of has like a stare down with the kids and is like, I'm good. I that's enough. I'm good. I'm out of here. And turns and leaves. So Toro, though, talk to me about Toro, because Toro looked incredible in this charred state, right?
Grotesque. There's this one money shot right at the side of it's like one of those like we were talking about before, like the Mosasaur scene where like it was like hyper real almost. Uh-huh. It was lit in a very similar fashion, but I was just shocked at how much they leaned into the wounds in Burns. Toro looks really, really cool, I guess, for lack of better words. And I think I said this in I don't know what I said it in, but like at this rate, Toro is going to look like Shin Godzilla with all these grotesque wounds and everything over. everything. Side note, I've noticed some people have suggested that Toro might be the Carnotaurus at the end of Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah.
So I can say this. At the premiere, for Fallen Kingdom, there were a bunch of IOM guys, and they pulled up some pictures of, like, it wasn't anything secret. There was nothing, like, there were no grand revelations or anything like that. Just one or two of these things didn't get up online. It was the turnarounds of the second Carnotaurus, and it's definitely not Toro. I mean, I guess they could retcon it to say it is.
Yeah.
But, like, at the same time, the design was so cool and so unique that I hope they don't retcon it to be Toro, because it was, like, really cool looking and, like, really, like, realistic. I don't know, it's like, man, I hope they use that again in the future somehow, because, like, it's a really cool, like, alternate coloration for the Carnotaurus. I saw some renders of it, at least.
Technically, the thing is out there, right? Like, it is, you know, I guess in California somewhere roaming around, right? So it is, you know, possible to see again. I
hope,
like, it's kind of like the whole Charlie explosion thing that we heard in the monorail. I'm like, I'm kind of hoping that it is Toro, just for the sake of, like, you know, some fun continuity between all these things.
I understand it, but then the way that I'd really like to do it, and we could just say it's like a visual flub of, like, the medium, but, like, Toro, if we saw a live action version of Camp Cretaceous, Toro would have always had that unique color scheme and then made his way to becoming more grotesque and scarred. That'd be, like, the way I'm totally chill with that. It's just, like, it's, like, such a cool, I like the idea of those colorations being, like, a natural state that the Carnotaurus have with sexual dimorphism. So I just, I don't want to lose that. That's mainly, it's just my nerd factor over that. It's like, I still want to lose that. If there's a way that you can make that all mesh, then absolutely works for me.
Yeah, I mean, technically, there's inconsistencies and stuff like that, so it really doesn't match up, but, like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, I kind of want it to, and I, you know, I've always said, like, oh, man, imagine if, like, Bumpy was the one that they sold at the auction, you know, like, so these, like, connections, like, they're like, retcons and stuff. It's, like, kind of like how, I guess, you know, they're saying that, like, Star Wars Rebels had, what's his name? I'm blanking on his name. Rex. You know, he became an old clone that had the big beard and they're saying he's the guy in Return.
Recontextualization.
I guess so. And he's the guy that they're saying is in, like, Return of the Jedi. That's, like, on, you know, the forest moon of Endor and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I love like that kind of thing. Even though it, like, doesn't really match up perfectly, but I'm here for it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Where it makes sense and where it doesn't necessarily make the world smaller, because Star Wars and the later sequels had a lot of things do this where everyone has to be, like, related to one another.
Sure,
and
it makes
everything feel, like, convoluted and small. In the case of Rex, though, I felt like that makes total sense. I think that's actually a lot of fun.
It is,
And I get it with Toro, just as long as there's some way that I don't, like, lose my alternate Carnotaurus skin that I want to see in beautiful rendering.
Yeah,
it's really what
I'm
going to.
Well,
like I said, silly reasons.
Yeah, hopefully we get to see another one at some point, but yeah, at that point, the explosion apparently blew a hole in the concrete, so we're good. The kids are out. They're running through the jungle trying to get to the dock.
Not a bomb shelter.
Yeah. I guess it didn't work out. But again, Jurassic World, you know, kind of stinks at doing any of that stuff, so maybe it was, and it just really failed.
they just like, skipped on budgetary.
John Hammond built this with his bare hands, and look how that turned out. So, anyway, they make their way to the dock, and the docks are, surprise, empty. All right, so no escape for you kids this time around. I have a little audio clip that I want to play before getting to our final audio clip that is from this episode. This one that we're going to play actually dates back to episode 3, and I like it. It's pretty cool. So we'll take a listen and then find out how it, you know, ties in.
We thought it'd be fun. We thought we'd be safe, but we didn't realize the horror waiting for us on the island. Claws. Teeth. Screaming. So much screaming.
So that was basically the intro to episode 3, where they're at this campfire. Mm-hmm. And I was saying in that review episode, I was saying, like, at that point when he starts talking, I'm thinking, like, it's a narration and he's talking about a bad experience that they apparently had off screen or something like that. So I'm like, oh, that's what that definitely is. Turned out it was just a campfire story and Brooklyn hates it and thinks it's dumb. But I want to play this next one, which is actually from the end of this episode. So take a listen.
We thought it'd be fun. We thought we'd be safe. But we didn't realize the horror waiting for us on the island. Claws, teeth, screaming. So much screaming. Despite all the hardships, we'll never give up. We'll keep fighting. That's the promise we make every day we get. We will survive. We will get home. Because no matter what happens, no matter what this place throws at us next, none of us are in this alone.
There we go. End of the episode.
I really like how during the campfire scene, the line delivery is really corny.
Uh-huh.
And at first, and then when they do the callback, and the callback is such a cool thing, but how it's no longer corny, just the inflection is very different. It feels more like I kind of almost take it in a way of his internal monologue of him trying to give himself a pep talk. Almost is sort of what it's maybe words that were never spoken aloud, but are playing in his head. But like it absolutely sets the tone. And the what we see during that, by the way, really cool Lost World inspired ending type of thing is what I really took it as. Yeah. It seemed to really take inspiration because that's the only type time Jurassic ever does those like nature pans in the films for whatever reason, something I would love to see a lot more of, but you know.
Yeah, I know. It is cool because you get to see like I forget exactly, but there was like a herd of some dinosaurs.
Sinoceratops and then the Crandons fly by and then there's
Blue's at the paddock, right? The original or the Raptor paddock.
I think Blue's like World. I don't exactly remember what Blue's doing, but yeah, we see Blue and we just get like a lot of really, really cool shots. Hold on. I'm actually watching it now. Stegosaurus, Brachiosaurus. It's a really cool. It feels very Lost World. It's cool.
Shot. Yeah, I love that. I love the Lost World is probably my favorite ending of any of the movies. So anytime we get like natural, dinosaurs in their habitat kind of thing, it's super awesome.
Totally. It's believable. Yeah.
The kids are alone. The kids are by themselves. His final speech, it's touching. It's reflecting back to that original story and kind of expanding on his like I said before, his Independence Day kind of moments, like hyping everybody up. But like, yeah, it's on them now. They're alone. So the episode then cuts to the jungle again. And Bumpy walking down the road, just trotting along. And she runs right into Ben and kind of sniffing around Ben. And then Ben's fingers subtly move just before the show cuts to black for the end of season one. So, yeah. So at that point, like, I mean, I'm like, Ben's fine. Like, he's going to get up, right? Like, everything's fine.
It's funny. Here's my question. Did you actually expect the kids to be stranded? Did you expect season one to conclude with them being rescued? Like, were you surprised? Did you ever really expect that, or did you kind of come into this like fully thinking that would be incredibly unlikely?
I thought that it would be unlikely that they'd be saved. I'm thinking like in terms of television show standards. I'm like, especially with this these creative teams and everything, you know, we've looked back on other shows that they've made and it's like, oh, some of them are like season 9 and I'm like, oh my God, there's so many episodes and like seasons. And I'm like, there's no way they're just going to be like a one and done. Right. So they have to explore whatever happens next. In my mind, I'm also like, well, we can't really do too long. Like it can't like linger, you know, it's not like these kids can just be there forever kind of thing.
You start running into problems. If like that starts happening, it starts, you know, like it loses like that intimacy of authenticity. So like it's like one of those things, like I think the story, I think they're at a good place though. You're a Jurassic World. If there's one place that you can have a story with kids being left alone, we're not talking about a wild island, we're talking about a park filled with like a lot of just I don't know, I think it's like an interesting story to tell And I don't think I ever wanted to see them rescued season one. I'm like, I want to see what happens. I want to see what happens when, like, the park is really just a playground. So it's a fun, it's a fun hook to leave it off at.
Oh, for
sure. Scary
hook
to leave at. It's a fun playground. Like, if you were a creator to play in that playground and tell stories, it is a fun toolbox to use. So it's like taking this, you know, leaving season one, I'm like, I'm really excited to see just where this goes.
And yeah, I mean, you think about the island and what there is to offer and everything. It's like, it has everything. Like, you could do whatever you wanted as long as you, I guess, maneuver around dinosaurs or whatever. But, like, it has everything. So they could, you know, they could stay there forever. But, like, I know a lot of people are like, well, I wonder if they're going to come into contact with the hunters from, you know, the Fallen Kingdom who are trying to get the dinosaurs. And I'm like, no, that's 3 years. We're not, or however long.
There is no, if that happens.
Like,
they'll have beards by then. Like, Kenji will just be an old.
They're tracking down. They're trying to, you know, hunt these dinosaurs down in the forest, and they see Blue out in there, and then there's Darius too. So no, that's not gonna happen. Like, yeah,
yeah. I think that what is interesting is in Fallen Kingdom, the beginning of Fallen Kingdom, the Indominus Rex Remain retrieval type thing.
Yeah.
I think that's put at 6 months, so it's still unlikely, but I don't think that's ever been officially dated, so that I could see maybe paying off is, like, that I could see that coming into play, I guess.
Yeah, that's one thing I've definitely been talking about for a while, is, like, we need to, that would be such a fun tie-in, because we left behind Jurassic World as far as the timeline's concerned. We have nothing to tie ourselves to. We can do whatever we want, you know, these kids can do whatever they want. But the one thing that we could tie ourselves to, if we wanted to, is that little, you know, that little mission there. And while it's not like going to be, you know, 6 episodes or whatever, like the, you know, the latter half of this season is, it could be something fun to touch on. And I don't know. I remember, you know, going into the end of this season just thinking that there's a world of possibilities, and that's hopeful for me. So. And Ben at the end moving his fingers, I'm like, all right, they're fine. Yeah, obviously, I never thought for a second that they're gonna kill off any children in the show. And I know some people are like expecting that to happen, but you know, that's not something
I don't want to see that, to be honest with you. No. Like, there are other ways to inject realism and stakes and drama rather than, like, lightheartedness and kind of jovialness and cartooniness. There are other ways to do that without killing kids. I don't want to have that, like, seared in my mind.
No, yeah. Like,
but I could have done without the Ben tease at the end. I think it would have been a lot more interesting to go into season two just without even having a stinger to even set, like, where's, because otherwise the entire narrative would be like now we know Ben's alive. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a lot more interesting just taking this hook, because, like, when I saw it, I'm like, I wish they wouldn't have taken I don't know, I wish I didn't see that, almost, even though I got it spoiled in the email. I still was thinking, like, man, this would have kind of been, like, cooler to leave without, just leave with one more element of unknown.
They could have, like, maybe ended with Bumpy still trotting through and then just, like, roaring out into the, you know, into the sky, just being, like, essentially saying, like, Ben, where are you? You know, kind of thing. And then cut to black. But, like, yeah, the season ends and I'm just elated. I loved every second of it pretty much. And I thought it was so much fun, a great way to expand the world. And all those tie-ins were incredible. I loved it, man. I think they nailed it out of the park, and, you know,
absolutely.
Nobody really knew what to expect. Like, is it going to be just for kids? Is it going to have anything that adults can have? And you know, we've mentioned that Jurassic is never very consistent with their canonical elements and stuff like that. And I think they did a decent job, you know, at keeping things straight. And it was surprising.
Yeah, I think that Fallen Kingdom has more canonical issues than Camp Cretaceous, to be entirely honest. So I think it does just fine. At least, you know, season one, from everything that we've seen so far. But, like, I don't think, yeah, they should stick closer to the details, and I would like to see a tightening up of detail management with Jurassic across the board. But I don't necessarily think that there's anything that didn't work, if that makes sense. Like, and I think that, I went in very skeptical, and I'm like, okay, this might not be, for me, it's like, is it as captivating as Clone Wars at its best, or the stories as like authentic to the films as Clone Wars at its best? No, but it's absolutely the framework for something like that. It's a great mm-hmm. first season. It's a really good story, really enjoyable. It has highs, lows, sad mo. It just, it hits you in the feelings in all the right ways. Yeah, no, I was just absolutely blown away. What a wild ride this season. Yeah. And just what an introduction to a show.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the Clone Wars. That's a show that, you know, it really had to find its footing, and it took like three seasons before it did so. You know, it's like, and it, plus there's like so many episodes with them, but like, yeah, it took a while.
Yeah, I mean, I gave up on that show many times. Those first two seasons of the Clone Wars, rough. I only just started finally watching this year, and I just started following episode guides for like the first two seasons and the third season. Then from the fourth season on, I've been watching, but it gets so good. But yeah, it's a bit of a, especially the disjointed anthology-like nature of its beginning, and then a lot of Jar Jar episodes. And I don't even hate Jar Jar that much, but like, I also, yeah, just the Clone Wars. If you've heard a lot of good things about the Clone Wars, then you go into it and you're like, man, I'm just not, it's, I don't get it. You're not wrong. You just haven't watched the right episode. Like, it gets its footing.
Yeah.
But I think Camp Cretaceous started with its footing.
They definitely, really cool. Yeah, they definitely did. And I don't know where I was going to go, but I love it, man. I think everything they did, they nailed. So, you know, they opened it up. It tried to go deep sometimes. It didn't necessarily go like super, super deep canonically, but it scratched the surface of some really fun stuff and some intriguing stuff. And it gives you a lot. Like it gives you a lot to explore, you know, going forward. Mm-hmm.
It definitely felt like it paid attention to details, where like it seemed like it was growing the world and it seemed very like logical. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. So that's, again, something that like it sets a really good precedent that, again, will be really fun to see how it evolves forward. Like something I'd like to see is like maybe the flooding of the lagoon, because that clearly happened when we see Fallen Kingdom, the way the lagoon is and the fact that Mosasaur like swam out. The lagoon flooded. We need to see that. Maybe that's something that could be a kind of an interesting way, rather than the kids running away from dinosaurs, we could run away from like a dam break and a flood or something. I don't know. There's a lot of cool ways to inject
conflict, I was playing the Minecraft game the other day, and when you zoom out and you look at the map, there's actually, you can see like two like river kind of things going off the side, I think.
Like,
and
a loop.
It makes it so that the Mosasaurus could eventually get out if it wanted to. So I'm like, all right, this is cool. Minecraft is doing more with the maps than
the tunnels. The tunnels are in Minecraft as well. The tunnels in Minecraft sort of remind me of these tunnels, because these tunnels clearly have like things for vehicles, and the Minecraft tunnels did that as well. So I'm like, oh, this is cool. Yeah, that was weird. I like that Minecraft game. Also, there's a feathered raptor out in it out of nowhere, which is like a very big tone shift for, I think, other than like the mobile games. Like, we haven't really seen that type of representation. I don't know, it's just, there's some interesting things in that Minecraft game where I'm like, this is a sleeper Jurassic. I wish there's more to it, because it's really good.
The other day, this is completely off topic for the end of this season, but I went into Minecraft and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna do this task that it wants me to make a dinosaur. I made a baby Gallimimus, and then it got trapped in a room. I've let it free in the lab for some reason, didn't mean to. It got trapped in a small office. And then all of a sudden, I shot a dart at it, and it fell asleep. And out of nowhere, while it was sleeping, it expanded into a full-size Gallimimus and then died. It just straight up died in the room. And I was so sad.
So horrifying.
It was terrible.
I guess this place was too small.
I think so. Crushed. It was getting crushed by the walls, apparently. And I felt really bad. The first dinosaur I've ever made in that game. And it's gone. It's gone.
That's so funny. So. You know, that game's fun. I've had similar sometimes where things like, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this right. And I'm like, no, it's eating me. What did I do?
So I guess that wraps up our look at Camp Cretaceous Season 1, with Season 2 right around the corner here. Stay tuned for some more Season 2 content and everything coming up here. But thanks for joining me, dude. Thanks for sticking around and watching these two episodes. And where can everybody find you online?
You know, Chris Likes Dinos, Jurassic Outpost. I don't know. I don't know anymore. Oh, like I said last time, I at this point I'm so scattered. What a year!
What? It's only January still.
It's only 16 days in. What a year!
Well, thanks for joining me. This might be the end of line for you, but we'll try to continue on. So thanks so much, man. It's been fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you all so much for listening. Make sure to find us over on JurassicParkPodcast.com. Find us over on Twitter at Jurassic Park Pod, on Instagram at Jurassic Park Podcast, and on Facebook as well. Please subscribe to us over on YouTube and follow us on all major podcasting platforms. Thanks, everybody.
Five minutes. Drop what you're doing and leave now.